everybody. Welcome back to the Bold Sidebar, talking all things New Jersey Supreme Court. This is your host, Jeff Horn. We have three cases this week, actually a pretty interesting week of cases. And my favorite one is the third one. I'll leave a little bit of suspense on that one. The first one is kind of interesting. It is Kim Goulding v. NJ, which is North Jersey Friendship House, decided on February 8th. Justice Fernandez-Vina writing for a unanimous court. This deals with workers' compensation when an employee volunteers at an employer-sponsored event. In this case, Kim Goulding was a chef for the North Jersey Friendship House, and they were having a community outreach event. She volunteered to cook for the event, stepped in a pothole, suffered an ankle injury, sought compensation, and the not-so-friendship house fought her claim, essentially saying that this injury occurred outside the scope of her employment, that it was a social or recreational event, and fell outside of the two-part test of NJSA 34:15-7. Comp Court, Workers' Compensation Court, dismissed the case. Appellate Division affirmed. Supreme Court reverses unanimously. The court found that Goulding's activity were consistent with her employment, were a regular incident of her employment, and that they produced a benefit to the employer, outreaching to the community, letting people know what they do, who they are. Perhaps there were donors there. Perhaps there were clients there, other vendors who might aid in the mission of the employer. The opinion makes repeated reference to the nature of the activities versus the event, i.e. the event was clearly designed to benefit the employer, and the activities that Goulding was participating in benefited the employer. My two cents is, had Goulding been injured doing the potato sack race after she had volunteered and cooked and everyone had been fed, this might have turned out differently. But as I refer to the Friendship House as the not-so-friendship house, you ask someone to volunteer, they volunteer. It's an activity or it's an event that's going to enhance the employer. Don't fight the workers' compensation claim if they twist an ankle, step in a pothole. It all sounds like work to me, and certainly Goulding would not have been there volunteering services to the employer but for the employment. The second case is an opinion by Justice Solomon. All justices join in except for Justice Albin, who files a dissent. State v. Herbie Desir, D-E-S-I-R, drops on February 9, 2021. It deals with a defendant's right to discovery in a criminal case involving a confidential informant. The defendant sold Molly to the confidential informant, who then passed the Molly onto the police, who utilized the sale of the Molly plus intercepted telephone conversations between the defendant and the confidential informant regarding the sale of firearms in addition to Molly. The information gathered by the police detective from the confidential informant was put together into an application for a no-knock warrant, which was granted. Police entered the defendant's home. He was arrested, charged, and in fact pled guilty to possession with the intent to distribute, but with a reservation to address motions that had been denied demanding discovery and peering into the murky waters of the police utilizing confidential informants. The appellate division, and now largely affirmed by the Supreme Court, permit the defendant some discovery into the truthfulness of the facts that were utilized to put together that no-knock warrant. there were questions that were unanswered, and the discovery that was turned over to the defense seems to have stopped short of giving the underlying basis for the warrant. For example, question whether the buy money for the confidential informant was provided by the police or the detective or not. It also appears that the laboratory report that gave rise to the initial determination that the material purchased by the confidential informant was Molly was not turned over. The leading case out of the U.S. Supreme Court on this issue is Franks v. Delaware, a 1978 case adopted in New Jersey, and State v. Howery in 1979. Here, in this case, in 2021, our Supreme Court now adopts a new standard out of the California Supreme Court, People v. Lutenberger, L-U-T-T-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, which is less demanding of a standard on the defendant. The court's looking for, in essence, the Lutenberger standard to get a defendant discovery is the applicant must justify in-camera review and discovery preliminary to a subfacial challenge to the search warrant. A defendant must offer evidence casting some reasonable doubt on the veracity of material statements made by the affiant. So you've got to have something, not conclusory statements and half-truths and half-measures. A defendant succeeds when there is sufficient basis to shake the confidence that there was indeed sufficient probable cause for the entry of the warrant, and then, as an intermediate step, gets the judge to review the discovery in camera, again, balancing the policy of good policing, enforcing the law, while protecting the identities and the locations, etc., use methods associated with confidential informants. And for today's most interesting case, February 11, 2021, Chief Justice Ravner, unanimous Supreme Court, in the matter of the request to release certain pretrial detainees. This is all about the COVID-19 pandemic that has been rattling around since the court's first lockdown. Of course, there have been no meaningful criminal trials in essentially a year in the state of New Jersey. This means that certain defendants remain in prison awaiting trial, and there was a challenge by the Office of the Public Defender and the ACLU to release all defendants that had been detained for 6 months or more where the most serious charge was second degree or lower, and a new detention hearing for all defendants held for 6 months on a first degree charge. The great irony being that New Jersey very recently reformed essentially the bail system under the Criminal Justice Reform Act and hardly detained anyone compared to the old practice when people were either detained or they obtained bail bond from a private bail bondsman. So the very law that has helped so many people charged with crimes that wouldn't have the economic resources to come up with money for a bail bond to get out was now the subject of a challenge by perhaps those very institutions that pushed from different angles to have the Reform Act entered into law. Everyone agreed that the Criminal Justice Reform Act is constitutional. What the act, and indeed no one in society quite knew how the pandemic was going to last so long and be so virulent as it has proved to be as we turn the corner on just about a year of lockdown. The order to show cause brought by these plaintiffs got the court thinking in fashioning a judicial remedy that was not available under the statute. So in essence, the court finds that any defendants that have been detained for 6 months or more have sort of an automatic set of rights. don't worry if someone is locked up on a murder charge. They do not qualify for this sort of procedural test. Hence, even defendants that have had a pretrial hearing and sought to be released can apply again and will be viewed, I should say, their level of risk will be viewed in light of the test set forth based upon the following five factors. One, the length of detention to date, as well as the projected length of ongoing detention. Two, whether a defendant has been or will be in detention longer than the likely amount of time the person would have actually spent in jail if convicted. Three, the existence and nature of a plea offer. Four, a defendant's particularized health risks, if any, and whether they present a heightened risk the individual will contract COVID-19. And five, other factors relevant to pretrial detention that are outlined in the statute NJSA 2A:162-20. The trial courts have been imbued with a lot of discretion to resolve motions brought by these applicants even without the necessity of a complete hearing. So the Supreme Court has created shortcuts to get people out of jail, out of prison, who have been sitting and may not even have to serve all of this time. That's, to me, a huge factor here. And let's say, cut through the red tape. Our criminal judges do a fantastic job. This past year, they have not been trying cases, so perhaps they can undertake the likely deluge of applications that'll be made by defendants who pose low risk to society and who, if they remain in jail for a lengthy period of time, are more apt to become sick, to need medical attention. Some will succumb to COVID-19. And of course, just creating more risk for all of the folks that work in the corrections system, corrections officers, staff, all exposed to people for a lengthy period of time. And this is just a way to stop the spread from getting into a prison population. And then the folks that leave the prison every day taking the coronavirus COVID-19 with them and putting it back into society. My two cents is, the question for the judges handling the matter is it more risky to the defendant and society to have the people, to have these defendants, these detainees out in the world? Or is it more risky to them and to society to have them in, getting COVID, exchanging COVID, and creating the petri dish? People that have written about this have referred to jails and prisons as the petri dish for all sorts of illnesses, all sorts of mixing of folks that may have pre-existing conditions. They may be sick when they come in. They may get sick. It may be difficult to diagnose what they have, then add the risks of the COVID-19 virus on top of that, and exposing all of the good folks that work in the system. A couple of friends of mine wrote passionately about this topic last spring of 2020. Jack Arsenal put out a very interesting article about this very topic. I believe it was on LinkedIn and other places. You can find it. And John Kufos of Right on Crime also wrote about this, and his article was in NJ.com in the op-ed pages going back to probably March or April 2020. So that which has been a concern to many, now there's a pretty clear path for relief, and hopefully taking some of the dormant aspects of our criminal courts, the prosecutor side, the defender side, all those resources ordinarily utilized to try cases can be utilized to apply this standard to those folks that are locked up and release those that are appropriate to be released and give everyone the due process they are entitled to and that these circumstances dictate. Now, my two cents, and I've written about this as well, and I thought this would be further along, is that we've got amazing technology. We've got ankle bracelets. They've been around a long time, but we've got so many other ways to keep track of people rather than locking them up, putting them into the petri dish, and spending enormous amounts of money to hold people who may or may not have a long prison sentence themselves. We've got transdermal alcohol monitors. We've got GPS. We've got drones. We've got so many ways to track people that pretrial detention is something that needs to be thought through from top to bottom, recognizing the literally magic of technology. I'm not saying everyone should be cut loose, and I'm not saying everyone should be cut loose on day one, but there comes a point where it's diminishing returns to keep people in prison. There's a point where they're pretty close to what they would have served had they pled guilty or been found guilty. So we get into a silly zone there. And the cost to society, if we're going to have a lot of dollars set aside for pandemics and such, perhaps we can pull a few dollars away from incarceration, turn those big buildings and big bureaucracies into lightning-fast technology that tracks people, whether they have been convicted of something or they're out awaiting the trial, so that they are just as closely scrutinized as if they were sitting in a prison, and yet perhaps they're being productive doing something. And certainly the state and federal dollars that are deployed in the expensive operating prisons can be deployed on something else. Thanks a lot. Usual spiel. Get ready. Please consider giving us a favorable review or rating on Apple or wherever else you look at your listen to your podcast, please. I put a good amount of time into this, and I would love to share these thoughts with others. And the best way for people to find the podcast is to find it through Apple and others, and they utilize the ratings and reviews to percolate the interesting, the new, and the semi-popular podcasts up to the top. So I would appreciate it very much. This is Jeff Horn signing off. Until next time, thanks a lot for listening.